All right, guys. Well, first and foremost, I'd like to thank you all for making it out tonight. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Vic Maurer. I'm Wilson Hall Government's president. And for those of you that haven't been to Wilson Hall before, well, welcome. I guess the first thing I should say is we aren't really the people that are responsible for making this happen tonight. The campus community as a whole, just in an amazing show of grassroots support for this. Thank you all for making this happen. And specifically, I have a list, so I'm going to run through this right quick. So first and foremost, I'd like to thank RHA, the Diversity and Community Advocacy Committee, and the Committee and Budget, and Eric Green for all their support, their kind words, their money. Without those guys, this really would not have been possible. We'd like to thank the Black Graduate Student Association of MSU. They came up huge for us, specifically Marini Lee, who put us into touch with all the right people in all the right places, that helped us immensely with the advertising, all that good stuff. Black Student Alliance, the Office of Racial Ethnic Student Affairs, and the Department of Residence Life, specifically Paul Rinella and Paul Goldblatt, for all their support and advertising and sponsoring. Most importantly, though, we'd like to thank all the Hall governments, again, whose grassroots support and fundraising efforts cut our workload in half, I mean, literally, and made tonight happen. We'd like to thank Noel Fagumps and McDonald Hall government, who went out of their way for us, in fact, actually amending their constitution in the middle of a meeting to give us more money than they were allowed to. Dwayne Jones, I don't see Dwayne here, but Dwayne Jones and Sir Shauna Patterson and the rest of Holden Hall government and Holden Black Caucus, again, for getting us into contact with the right people, as well as their financial support. Wondrous Hall government and Stacey Gunner and Paul Rinella. Gunner was with us from the beginning on this one, came up huge, really appreciate her help. Brian Hall government, Holmes Hall government, Landon Hall government, Acres Hall government, and specifically Crystal Griffin and Ashley Jackson over in Acres. They're with the Office of Racial Ethnic Student Affairs. They flyered for us and they just did an unbelievable amount of work for us. Snyder Hall government and Bailey Hall government, who really, Bailey Hall government, we didn't even ask for money. They came to us to give us money for this. It was that important to them. And Snyder Hall government, who gave us more than we asked for. And of course, our host, the General Assembly of Wilson Hall government, housing here in Wilson Hall, and the mentor staff of Wilson Hall for coming out and supporting us, as well as Wilson Hall Black Caucus and Dominique Pels. I guess I'm just going to start by saying that as a body, the students of Michigan State University have been a part of a great wave of change that has swept our nation. And here in 2005, it is our struggle and our university's 150 years of struggle toward justice, toward liberty, and toward equality that have heralded us as leaders among men and leaders in our community and in our state. It is in the spirit of this 150 years of struggle that we present to you today an opportunity to be a part of a grand tradition of progressive change. It is with great pride today that we share with you one of my heroes, a man whose struggles captivated a nation and shook the very foundations upon which it was set and forced us to reinterpret and understand what it is that makes us Americans. I stand here in awe of him, of all of you, for what he is, and what I know we all can become. Jeremy, would you like to introduce Mr. Hilliard?
I'm gonna stand back here so I can kind of look up as I'm reading. With us tonight is one of the original members and leaders of the Black Panther Party, perhaps one of the most controversial and enigmatic groups in our nation's history. The era of the late 60s to early 70s that the Panthers dominated is a part of Black history and American history that we often don't hear as much about as other stages in the struggle for civil rights. Because of this, misperceptions of the Black Panther Party and their role in the struggle are widespread. When a lot of people think of the Black Panthers, they think of the police patrols and the shootouts and prematurely conclude that the Panthers were simply violent thugs, but in reality, they were much deeper than that. Started as the Black Panther Party for self-defense, the Panthers were dedicated not to inciting violence, but to stopping it. Tonight's speaker, Mr. David Hilliard, writes about this issue of violence in his book, This Side of Glory, saying, quote, "Aren't you violent?" they ask over and over again. "No, we're not violent," we consistently answer. Violence is what's being done in Vietnam, where napalm burns the innocent to death. Violence is people going unemployed 6 months of the year, living with drugs and alcohol in their community. Violence is most assuredly a police force that harasses, terrorizes, and kills the people it is being paid to protect. But violence is not us standing with our guns saying simply, no, you can't come in here like you used to, and shoot and maim and brutalize people at your will. So we're not violent. We're opposed to violence, opposed to war, but we are for self-defense. End quote. Beyond protecting themselves from police brutality, the Panthers were also about serving their community. Throughout the late 60s and early 70s, they created countless community service programs, their most famous being their free children's breakfast program, in which they fed thousands of children a hot breakfast every morning before they went off to school. Another important aspect of the Black Panther Party was their eagerness to work with other groups in their fight for social justice. For whatever reason, there seems to be a common misperception that the Panthers were only about helping black people. But their motto wasn't black power, it was all power to the people. The Panthers were dedicated to helping all oppressed and underprivileged people and felt that it was necessary for all kinds of different groups to come together to do so. As David put it so well earlier today when he was being interviewed by the State News, the cat was black, not the politics. But enough with hearing about the Black Panther Party from me. With us tonight is David Hilliard, an original member and chief of staff of the Black Panther Party. Mr. Hilliard played a very active role in the party, being involved in almost all their major activities. With his involvement in the party and his close personal friendship with the group's creator and chief theorist, the late Dr. Huey P. Newton, Mr. Hilliard had a firsthand view of what the Black Panther Party was all about. We should all be grateful that he is not only willing, but also eager to share his knowledge and memories with us. Without further ado, please welcome Mr. David Hilliard.
Bear with me because I'm coming here really a couple of days ago. I was 102 degrees fever and all kinds of stuff from some cold and virus that's going around. But because of Jeremy, who's been insistent for I don't know a few months, and Vic, it was incumbent that I do everything that I could to get up out of the bed and take this cold medication and come here and talk to students at Michigan State. I'm always eager to share our history with youth because, as you'll see as we go through these slides, that we were you. We were therefore you are. I was in my 20s when I joined the Black Panther Party, and the bulk of our movement were high school, college students, so we truly represented a youth constituency. So this is where I feel comfortable. We were always on college campuses in the old days. I want to say that these guys were persistent and they all made it happen. From the outset, certainly I'm used to having people stand around with pickets and people screaming, negatives about our movement. That has always happened, and it's always been as wrong as this leaflet is. You didn't quite get it right. And this leaflet is no exception, where it says, one, that I was sentenced to 6 months jail term and fined $500 for carrying a loaded gun in public. It never happened to me. I don't know what David Hilliard was talking about. And I challenge you guys to do the research, because that's how they get away with this stuff. You don't do the research. I spent a year in jail after threatening the life of the president. You only get a year for threatening the president. Huey's partner in the Black Panther Party, Huey Newton, was involved in the murder of a police officer. Huey Newton was accused of shooting one police officer and killing another. He was accused. Huey Newton was vindicated. Huey Newton was tried 57 times. Huey Newton was vindicated 57 times. Do the research. It's there. It's all in public documents. Huey Newton's PhD thesis is called The War Against the Panthers, A Study of Repression in America. You guys are students. Do the research. So they got maybe one almost right. I served 4 years in prison after being convicted for role in a police shootout. Well, I was separate from the case in the first week. After 2 years, this is 1968, I came back from Algiers, Algeria. I'm the leader of the Black Panther Party. We're a global movement. I was arrested in the airport in San Francisco again on this case that was dropped in 68 because the state claimed they had new information, tried me, and I got convicted to 6 months to 10 years in prison, and I did 4 years on a case that had nothing to do with the original case. I was convicted for a battery on the police, but when they got me in prison, as they do, it's pretty difficult to get out of prison because there was always these infractions and these reasons to keep me in prison. But I was never convicted of shooting anybody because I never shot anybody. So they're wrong on almost every account, and that's generally how this stuff happens with these organizations who just take stuff, bait it straight from police files and put it out as if though it's factual information. But what you'll see tonight is a visual documentation evidence that our movement certainly was a self-defense movement. We dealt with that. That was the inception of our Black Panther Party during police patrols in Oakland, California. But it was much more than that. It was all about these community service programs. And it's important to understand the climate that gave rise to the Black Panther Party. We didn't just happen. We were not some social accident. And then it's 1966. And many of you, you study the civil rights movement, you must know that in 1964, people couldn't even vote in Mississippi. You know, they were still bombing people in the South. The four little girls in Birmingham, you guys know about that. You know about the school desegregations in the South. Police were killing black people with impunity. Nothing's being done about that. 40-some people killed in Watts in 1965. 1,800 people are wounded. In a six-month period, there's 168 rebellions in America in a six-month period. 168. Detroit is noted for these rebellions in America. So we came out of that spirit. That was the spirit of the times. There's a war in Vietnam. Malcolm X was killed in 1965. So you got to take it in context. You know, you see these people standing with dogs and water hoses and tanks telling people they can't come to school. So these were very, very bad times in America, very violent times. We responded to that violence, as Jeremy said, from a self-defense posture. We were not about violence. We were about putting down the violence and the disturbers of the peace. We were a peace organization. We called for the abolition of wars in Vietnam. We called for all wars of aggression against anybody. We hated violence. We were victims of violence. Were these people that were brought over here in the bottom of ships like cattle slavery, who were lynched and burned. So we didn't purvey violence. It was not our goal. We wanted a very humane society that would give us the benefit of the very best technology provided, period. We make no apologies for that. But in the process of doing that, we were not about the business of being brutalized and abused by some racists that hated us just because we looked differently. We didn't accept that. Why? Well, we were 18 years old, 24. We were youth. We wasn't a part of Martin Luther King's SCLC. That's my grandmother and my mother. We're the young folks that don't stand for no jive like that. And that's who the Black Panther Party was. But the fact of the matter is, it was not our agenda to practice racism. It was not our agenda to promote violence. We were against violence. So I think that that's what you're going to see in the video frames, in the slide frames as we go through them. It's also important to realize that our movement was a multicultural movement almost from its inception. We lived in California, Berkeley, Oakland, with these mixed families. We represented that in the dynamics of our movement. From the inception, we were involved with Asians. We were involved with Latinos or Mexicans, if you will. We were involved with Puerto Ricans in New York and in Chicago, with the working class whites in Chicago from Appalachia. We were involved with the gay movement in 1969 when nobody would associate with the gay movement. Our Black Panther Party was in coalition with the gay movement. Huey Newton writes about that in his anthology called To Die for the People. So one of the most impactful, I think, contributions of our Black Panther Party and the most outstanding, should be certainly underscored, was that we were an organization that had a class-based analysis. And we worked with anybody as long as they hated oppression. And we worked with anybody regardless to what their ethnicity, their religious background. We didn't care anything about that. All people have to have in common with us to work in our Black Panther Party was a common hatred and a dislike for injustices. That was the only criteria. And that's why I joined the Black Panther Party. So I think that the best way to get into this is to move through these slides that I think that are very, very forceful, that will give you without doubt the essence of our movement, which was community service, service to the people through our programs. We had about, I don't know, 30 programs that were community service programs, everything from, we did un-American things, like giving people free health care, free prescriptions. We bused seniors to the bank, took seniors to the doctors. We tested 500,000 African Americans for sickle cell anemia. 500,000. We started the Free Breakfast for Children programs. Why? Well, not rocket science. Parents couldn't afford food. Kids couldn't study and couldn't concentrate. We said, oh, maybe it's because they're hungry. Why don't we give them breakfast? So we went to the church. Churches are not being used Mondays through Fridays. And we said, your churches have these cooking facilities. We got people. We'll get food. We want to use your church to feed kids. What do you know? 47 states in America replicated that model in California. We have a Free Breakfast for Children program that now feeds 72% of every kid in America. That's what our Black Panther Party was about. Keep in mind that everything that we did was really underscored by that 10-point program that we had. That one called for what? Full employment for our people, decent education, jobs, as we already said. Number six, universal health care. Yes, we called for an end to people being put in prisons. Why? Because it was how they got there that we were questioning. They got there like I did, an all-white jury. An all-white jury is how I got convicted. No evidence. The jury thought they were doing me a favor. They said I'd probably do 6 months and get out, and you know, that's it. It's the old Roman law. You get 1,000 lashes if you're guilty, 100 if you're not. So I went to prison. So it was what we questioned about the judicial system. We said it's how you send people to prison is what we questioned. So what did we ask for in our 10-point program? We said we want a jury of our own peers. How do we define peers? Somebody with the same economic, sociological, historical, cultural background. If they don't represent that on a jury, then this jury is unconstitutional. We can't abide by this. It's a racist jury. It has no understanding of what we're about. They think all Black folks are thugs and criminals. Put somebody in there on these juries that understand who we are, that understand what we are psychologically, sociologically. So all of that was outlined in our 10-point program. And over again, that's what you're going to see in these slides. So without further ado, I'm going to do the slides. And as I go through the slides, we'll talk about them, and then hopefully we'll spend enough time so that you guys can have some debate, because this is a college classroom, and it's about that. It's about debates, about hearing your ideas. So let's start with where we started. This is 1967. Where Huey and Bobby, that's how we used to dress in the 60s, especially when we did patrols, Huey with the shotgun. And Huey got that shotgun there because that's what the police used to carry. He says, I want the same gun that they carry, because they know what that gun will do. They're afraid of that gun just as we are. So I'm going to have the same gun they have. So that's why he bought that big shotgun. Bobby has a 45, and we used to patrol the police. We get in our cars, we patrol the police. Police giving somebody a ticket. We stand at a reasonable distance. Huey Newton was a law student. You don't know because nobody ever sees the law book. But there was two arms, the gun and a law book. He was a law student at San Francisco Law School. So he was standing there with the law book in one hand, the shotgun in the other, and he'd read to the police that we're going to stand a reasonable distance, guaranteed to us, one, by your constitution, secondly, by a fish and game warrant law that say we have a right to carry these guns, and there's nothing you can do about it. And we're going to observe you while you carry out your duty of giving people tickets. We just want to make sure you didn't brutalize anybody. Of course, that was short-lived because the state legislature from my district in Northern California immediately introduced a law to change the law that was on the book that gave us a right to carry those guns. His name was Mumford. And if you read Huey Newton's anthology, edited, authorized by non-Pulitzerized prize winner Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison bought this book in 1970. It's called To Die for the People. You'll read where this Mumford assemblyman wrote this law and immediately changed our right to carry those guns. So there's a very brief period in the life of the Black Panther Party where that gun stuff was even a part of our history. But it is the one thing that you know more than anything else about our movement. That's all you do know. There are these guys with these guns, they went to Sacramento, they were a very violent movement, they had fights with police. That's not what we were about. We were about that 10-point program that I just told you about. This stuff here came as a result of the police being so racist and so brutal that we had to do something about it. But as soon as the police stopped their brutality, stopped doing what they did in terms of violating our laws, then the guns were no longer a part of the Black Panther Party's program. By 1970, those guns are nowhere. It's now all about this other stuff that you'll see in these frames as we go through it. We were political prisoners, as it said on that first cover. Oh, by the way, these are covers of our newspapers. And the term political prisoners were coined by our Black Panther Party. That was not even in the lexicon in America's social laws movements. We coined political prisoners as Huey Newton being the first during 1967, where he was arrested of allegedly shooting one police officer and killing another. And then remember, he was vindicated for that. Every time he went to court, 57 times, keep that in mind, he was vindicated 57 times. Now, wouldn't you say, well, there must have been something wrong there. I mean, every time this guy go to court, he gets the 12 jurors, they let him go. One would think that there's some kind of conspiracy going on. But this is Bobby Seale, who was also accused of kidnap, murder, brutality, all this kind of stuff, of a guy named Alex Rackley in Connecticut. Bobby Seale was vindicated. Bobby Seale killed no one. Yes, a guy got killed. His name was Alex Rackley, but guess who killed him? An FBI informant named George Sams, who was hired by the FBI to infiltrate our movement, and that guy actually killed somebody. And Bobby Seale was in Connecticut, and Bobby got framed on that case, along with Erica Huggins, who you will see in these frames, and my sister-in-law, Frances Carter Hilliard, who was the leader of our chapter in New Haven, Connecticut. They wiped out the entire chapter over this case where everybody was vindicated because it was proven that some FBI paid informant killed the guy. His name was George Sams. Do the research. It's all in the history. This is just us talking about the Supreme Court and how unjust they are with the death penalty. And, you know, we were above that. There's Erica Huggins, who was a part of the New Haven Panthers that were arrested for murder and conspiracy, et cetera. And Erica Huggins was the first of our women who were put in prison for these frame-ups. Erica went on to become the founder of our Black Panther Party school, the Oakland Learning Center, that was one of the finest schools in the state of California, that was given commendations by then Governor Jerry Brown and Willie Brown, who was then the assembly leader, who was most recently the mayor of San Francisco. And Erica was vindicated with all of the other Panther Party members. Erica's daughter that you will see in another frame is now a woman who works for Sony, whose artists were like Lauryn Hill and Little Bothwell. Those were our kids who we took very good care of, who went to the finest schools and who got very good educations because that's what we were about. There's Erica with her daughter, Maya. Maya, whose husband is James Leggett, who's Will Smith's movie partner. That's who Erica is. That's Erica's husband who was killed in 1969 at UCLA by some other black cultural group members called the US Organization, Ronke Raker's group. Killed our Black Panther Party members, shot him in the back. Nobody was ever arrested for that. You guys need to consider that when you study the history of the Black Panther Party. Why they shoot the Panthers and why nothing ever happened? Well, do the research. I went to prison. That's what this was about. We're talking about April 6th. So I'm in prison here. Obviously, people are saying I should be back among the people. So when I challenged the all-white jury that convicted me in the first place. I get all-white jury in a city that's 72% black. Of course, I was denied parole. Supposed to do 6 months, I did 4 years. 6 months, they say. 4 years. For nothing. And when I was let out of prison, the FBI used to come visit me once a year and say, hey, we'll give you $50,000 if you work for us. We just want you to, when you get released, to just tell us what's going on and tell us what Newton's doing. Of course, I just said, I never work for you guys. If I never get out of prison, but I'll never work for the FBI. I'm work to do work for, in my community for our people. So finally, when I did get out, 4 years later, they came and they said, hey, you like to go home? I said, well, I guess if it's time, I'll go home. If not, I'll be in prison. They said, you can go home now because your organization no longer exists. Newton's in exile, Cleaver's in exile, Seal's in prison. You have nothing to go home to. Now you can go home. What does that tell you? Well, if I'm in prison, I'm a leader. Cleaver's in exile, Seal's in prison, Newton's in prison. They've negated all of the leadership, which is exactly what they meant to do. Again, this is when I'm in prison, some commemoration for me on my birthday at a local park. We always used the parks in the community. That was our method of organizing, and we believed in using open spaces. George Jackson was the beginning of prison movements. Your prison movements these days have its basis in George Jackson and Soledad. When you think about prisons, you have to reckon it this way. Soledad, the origin of your prison movement. Attica, then whatever you have now. But it all started with George Jackson and the Free Huey Newton movement. We were the beginning of the modern prison movement. George Jackson was a member of our Black Panther Party, who became one of the more prolific writers in the history of literary writing and book writing in San Quentin. Did two books. One was The Soledad Brothers, and he did One Blood in My Eye. Of course, George Jackson was killed in San Quentin in the 1970s, but he was drafted into our Black Panther Party while he was in prison and became obviously very much hated, very dangerous man, because when he went to prison, he was convicted of a $75 robbery. He never got out. Obviously, he got killed in there. But he became a political entity and became thereby an enemy to the state, because what he went to prison for was not why he was kept in prison. He was kept in prison for his beliefs. This is at George Jackson's funeral. And note the crowd. There are white people there. There's a very multi-ethnic mix of people. 10,000 people showed up for George Jackson's funeral. This is inside the funeral. There's Huey Newton with the beret on. It's one of the few times that we ever really wore our full uniform, was mostly at funerals. And we really never got a chance to socialize if it wasn't a funeral, as a matter of fact, because we were too busy working. We're up at 5 o'clock in the morning fixing the food for kids, in the community every day doing work with senior centers, citizens at our centers, and our health clinics. I mean, you actually worked in the Black Panther Party. You didn't come in the Black Panther Party, sit around, and just read papers and answer the phone. We get your butt out here and go in that community and do the work. You don't come in here and sit around. If you don't work, don't come back here no more. You gotta work. That's what we did. That's why we were such a successful movement. We didn't talk, we worked. We combined theory with practice. We criticized people if all they do is sit around and read books and talk. So we were not about that. We were about work, and that's why we still are romanticized. That's why this generation, especially hip-hop, embraced this Black Panther Party, because we did something. And we live because of that. I'm standing here because of the work that we did in the community, as you'll see. Those are the 10,000 people that was at George Jackson's funeral. They couldn't get in, so that's a supermarket. Like your A&P markets or whatever they are, the people got ladders, and they're standing on top of that grocery store. So we put microphones outside so people could actually hear what was going on in the church. So these are all of the people that came to this man's funeral. That many people don't turn out just for some common thug. Another view of the funeral procession. Free Angela Davis. Angela Davis was not a member of our Black Panther Party. Angela Davis was a member of the Communist Party. But Angela Davis worked with our movement. Angela Davis is now at UC Santa Cruz. Huey Newton's alma mater. Huey Newton is a PhD from UC Santa Cruz in the history of consciousness, where Angela Davis now teaches. So Angela was then being hunted by the Cubans who did a leaflet for her called Liberty for Angela. You know about Geronimo Pratt, 27 years in the penitentiary, on a frame up by some FBI informant, released, 6-7 years ago. 27 years in prison on a frame up. We ran Eldridge Cleaver for president, 1968. Eldridge got 37,000 votes. Not a lot of votes at all, but it didn't matter. We ran him because it gave him a national platform. So when you see, you know, these organizations like the Greens and some of these movements that are now talking about third party, we were the precursor to that. We also ran Huey Newton for senator when he was in jail. And we ran Bobby Seale on a ticket. And we ran Kathleen Cleaver for assembly person. This is in 1968. There's Kathleen in another one of her lives. Kathleen Cleaver, who is now the PhD, the professor at Emory University. Kathleen Cleaver, who's a graduate of Yale University's law school. Kathleen Cleaver, who was a fellow at Harvard with Skip Gates and Cornel West and Julius Wilson. Well, that's Kathleen in 1968. Chairman Bobby Seale for mayor. Bobby got 78% of the vote. I mean 72%. What am I talking about? Bobby got 42% to vote. 72% African Americans voted for Bobby Seale. The highest African American turnout ever in the history of Oakland, California. Hasn't happened since then. We're about the business of registering voters. We said that in order to change the system, you got to be a part of it. You can't change the system being outside. That's a misnomer for people who say, well, they work outside the system. Well, we were taught to say, well, those people have a misunderstanding of how the system works. There is no in and out of the system. You don't be outside the system. The system won't allow you to be outside. And how you become effective is you have to be internal, because change is internal, not external. If you want to make a difference, then you got to be a part of the process. So we began to learn that. So we began to register voters. On this particular campaign, we registered about 90,000 voters. Registering people to vote, because we believed in that. Also, we believed in working with seniors. That was this dynamic between the youth, the young, and the old. We took lessons from the seniors. This is that COINTELPRO, which means counterintelligence program. Out of 278 attacks against left movements, 79% was against my movement. And the rest was between American Indians and SDS and King. But 79% was against the Black Panther Party. And never in history has that kind of resource been put against a domestic organization. Never in history. You can read that by reading Huey Newton's dissertation. It's called War Against the Panthers, A Study of Repression in America. I'm sure you can order that book on Amazon, and certainly you can order it from UC Santa Cruz and the Department of Philosophy and Sociology. You should be able to order it from the college if you're interested in it. Again, this is our slogan, all power to the people. Actually, it's all power to all the people. And black power to black people, green power to green people, red power to red people, what do we care? You know, it's to people power. It's when we worked with the Latinos, with the Mexicans. 1968, we were already working with the farm workers. We sent out Panther Party members to work in the fields with the farm workers. We also went a step beyond that. There were these, I think La Siete means seven. I always get that wrong, even after all these years. La Siete de la Raza were these brothers in the mission who got arrested, who didn't have any money, who couldn't afford a legal representation. Our Black Panther Party gave them $10,000 out of our money, out of our fund, got them our lawyer, and used them and put them on the front pages of our papers. Every week we'd have 12 pages in Spanish and 12 pages in English to show solidarity with those brown brothers and sisters in the Mission District. Not to talk about it, not to just show up and be at a demonstration and holler a lot of empty slogans, but now how do you really, really make an impact? Well, you give. You give your time, you give your service, you give your money. That's what we did. That's how we stressed solidarity with the Browns. See? La Siete de la Raza, those are the guys. We gave them the front page of our newspapers. We gave them our money. We gave them our lawyers. The same with the Browns. I mean, with the Native American, with the First Nation people. Didn't talk about it. We put them in our newspapers. Our newspapers at this particular time was 178,000 a week, another 80,000 abroad. We were in 47 cities and states in America and 8 foreign countries. So that paper went to Germany, it went to France, it went to the Soviet Union, it went to China, it went to Cuba, it went to Africa, it went to Latin America, it went to Central America. And everywhere it went, the message of these Native American people was in our newspaper. And the same with this, the trail of broken treaties, you know, at Wounded Knee. We, you know, we showed these Native American people, hey, we willing to share, we'll work with you. And we won't do just talk, we'll give you our newspaper to get your message across. And the same with the Africans. This is Huey Newton with Samora Machel. Samora Machel was the president of Mozambique. Nelson Mandela is married to this woman that used to be Samora Machel's wife, Mrs. Machel. That's who Nelson Mandela is married to right now. So we were in coalition with, of course, our African brothers and sisters, because we're Africans. And you'll see that there's another paper that say Africa is yours as well as ours, because we were a global movement. There it is. There's Huey with David Sabiko from the Pan-African Congress. So we were working with the South Africans to end apartheid in South Africa. We didn't talk about it. We sent our guys to South Africa to fight with the South Africans. Huey Newton offered our Black Panther Party members to go fight with the Vietnamese. He says, we won't just march and we won't just demonstrate. We'll send some Panthers over there to fight with you, because that's how we believe that this struggle is one struggle, and what is happening to your people is so unjust and so wrong. And we were criticized for that by a lot of people who call us unpatriotic. Because how could you do that? Well, it's the same thing that's happening in Iraq right now. Our war hasn't, we have no business fighting people in Iraq. You're spending $90 billion a day and you don't have one social service program here in Lansing, Michigan, or Detroit. It's not where our problems are. Our problems are right here at home. That's why we said we want an end to all wars of aggression. Get out of Vietnam, get out of Iraq, get out of Central America, because that's not where our business is. Our business is right here at home. And we were not afraid to do that. That is the one difference between the Black Panther Party and all of these organizations that you read in history. We stood for something, and we were willing to die for it. And in some cases, we were willing to kill for it. We didn't pick no bones about that. We're going to have our freedom. We're going to have respect in doing it. We ain't going to beg nobody. You don't like us, what do we care? You just live on your little racist side of the street and don't come on mine. Because you can't buy that. You can't have that here. And that's what we stood for. This is Huey with Yasser Arafat. Why would these thug Black Panther Party members meet with these heads of states? Why would Shamira Michelle meet with Huey Newton? Why are we meeting with Yasser Arafat in Palestine? Why? Well, that's something you guys ought to try to figure out. Obviously, it's not because we were thugs and criminals. These people don't meet with thugs and criminals. These are heads of states. We also met with the leader of the 800 million Chinese. We were invited there by the People's Republic of China on two occasions. The first time any black organization in the history of this world has been invited to speak to 800 million Chinese. They invited our Black Panther Party two times. There it is. That's Premier Chiu En-lai, who was the second most powerful man in the People's Republic of China, a billion people. And we're meeting with the Chinese. Why? Because the Chinese said that we respect what your organization is doing for all oppressed people, and we want to stress solidarity with you. So you come to China and you see what we're doing. This is our Minister of Education, Masai Hewitt, at a nursery school in the People's Republic of China. When we went to visit the schools, we visited the factories, and we brought back a message of solidarity to African Americans and the Chinese people. Again, Huey with Yasser Arafat. This is Mills College. CSAR's people didn't have anywhere to stay, the farm workers. Elaine Brown, Erica Huggins, 6 to 7 of our women were college students. Congresswoman Barbara Lee was a student there. Barbara Lee used to work for our Black Panther Party. So Barbara Lee says, through Elaine Brown, right there with Cesar Chavez's guy, well, the school is not being used, it's a break, so maybe, you know, you guys could stay here. So Elaine Brown and Erica Huggins went and got these farm workers and say, hey, bring your sleeping bags and you can sleep here at Mills College for the weekend. So that's what that's all about. We said, and we're used to doing it, we said, if college is open, belongs to the people, come on in. And we let them stay there as we expressed our solidarity, because these people didn't have anywhere to stay. That's my sister-in-law stirring in that pot, former sister-in-law, she's now deceased. That girl right there is only 15 years old. Her name was Madeline. But again, we were a multiracial organization, a multicultural organization. So Marion, who's stirring in the pot, my sister-in-law, and the young girl Madeline, they're preparing the food for the Breakfast for Children program. We broke down the stereotypes. We say, there's gotta be some role reversal in this organization. All those traditional roles where women did the cooking and serving the food, you fools got to get up here and do something different. You get up in those kitchens, get in those aprons, and go work for these children, unless you don't come back in this office. So Charles Bursey was the first brother to put on an apron to set the example. So men was doing the work that women traditionally do, because it was this thing about the new man, the new woman, that we were trying to exemplify and bring about in our movement. Same guy serving the little girl food. Self-explanatory, this boy is really happy with his bread and his bacon. Our People's Free Food Program. This is where we're giving away 10,000 bags of groceries. We do this like once a month. And you know, the interesting thing, when you came to a Black Panther Party event, you didn't just come to hear speeches. Like if this was a Black Panther Party event tonight, there'd be voter registration forms here. There'd be something here for you to sign up to do lead poisoning testing or to work for some children or something. When you came for a Black Panther Party event, you came to get get involved. We'll just get you here just to talk to you to make you feel good. We said, no, you gotta work. You gotta be a part of something. So all of our events were like that. That's why you see register to vote. You got some groceries, but you have to sign something too. You gotta come back and do some work. These are young women and guys putting the stuff together in the baskets. It was all encompassing. The kids came, the grandparents came, the mothers came. Those cousins, everybody came to a Black Panther Party event. You came ready to hang out during the day. The music was there. Santana would do something. The Grateful Dead did events for our Black Panther Party. You know, we were what was going on. Everybody won't be a part of the Black Panther Party. We the model. We set the standard. This is our guys unloading the trucks, getting ready for the food. See, the stuff came in trucks. We can weigh 10,000 bags of groceries. Another angle of us putting the bags together, getting ready to serve the people. Look at all those people. The only time you see that many people in a park now is if 50 Cent showed up. But these people came for politics. They came because they didn't like the rent increases. They didn't like something going on in the educational system. They came there for the politics. And that's what you guys got to get back to. You got to get involved. You got to get people motivated. You got to get people involved in what goes on in that community. We didn't waste our time worried about what's going to happen with a presidential election because we say our politics are local. We're going to control what happens in our community. This city council is going to make sure that their money is used in the community in a positive way for education programs, youth programs, etc. That's what you guys got to get back to in your own communities. It's pretty difficult to control what George Bush is doing in Washington, D.C., but you can control what your mayor's doing here locally and what your city council person is doing. And that's where the Black Panther Party became so powerful because we were about community control of politics. Doesn't that look like something out of the 30s, the Depression era? That's just another shot of some of those people waiting for that food in the park. Same group, same folks, waiting patiently to get their food. And they get it, and they'd be happy to get it. Look at that lady there, I got mine. Kids. Here we go, sickle cell anemia. Remember 500,000 people? And it started on a very simple note. There was a girl who came to our office on Shattuck in Berkeley. She came from New York, and I come in the office, and she'd be on the desk, and she'd be sleeping and holding her stomach. It's like, I've been watching you. You come in here, and you nod, and then your stomach is hurt, and you use heroin. And she said, no. I said, well, we don't believe you. We're going to take you to our doctors. And we're going to have them check you out. And if you're using heroin, you got to get on the bus and get back to New York because you can't use drugs and be nodding in our office. Well, we took her to the doctor. He checked her out. And he says, she has a blood disease, a trait called sickle cell anemia. She was ashamed to tell you guys because she thought that you wouldn't let her work. And I said, oh my God, we just dogged this girl like this, and this girl is really sick, and I'm thinking because she's from New York, she's nodding. And that's how ignorant we were. I said, well, we're going to do something about that. We're going to go and we're going to organize, this is how Black Panther Party works, we're going to organize a major effort, because now we're learning this disease just for African Americans, we don't know anything about it, we put it in our newspapers. We got this doctor, we sent him to Chicago, which was the toughest organizing chapter we had under Fred Hampton and those guys. Next thing we know, Fred and those guys got a free sickle cell anemia clinic open. Now we're going, moving forward, we got one in New York. The one in California is upstanding. Don't you know that in 5 years, 500,000 people tested, Richard Nixon implemented, because we shamed them, implemented a sickle cell anemia research foundation fund. That's the work of my Black Panther Party. That's our legacy. But we didn't curse the darkness. He said, we're going to do something about this. We know now, and we're going to make something happen. So now, The number one sickle cell anemia research center is in Oakland, California, at the Olds College where Huey and Bobby Seale started. That's the impact of the Black Panther Party. That's what you do at a rally. You come to a rally, people speak, people giving away food, but guess what you can do? You can walk over to the table with the nurses, and the kids can get tested for lead poisoning, sickle cell anemia. You don't have medical, you go get your blood pressure tested. On another table, we got free medication that you can get for high blood pressure. That's what happens at a Black Panther Party event. Because we were what? Servants of the people, a community service organization, always trying to figure out how to empower, how to lift ourselves up. The government ain't gonna do nothing for us. We say, that's all right, we'll change the government. We don't like the way the government treat us. So we ain't gonna just sit there and scream about it. We gonna change it. And we move to change it in those ways. Look, testing the kids for lead poisoning in the park, bringing the resources to the people, working with the seniors, busing the seniors to the bank, giving them free medication, going to their senior centers, helping and protecting the seniors. That's what the Black Panther Party stood for. In the houses, talking to the seniors about what their problems are. That's Elaine Brown talking to the seniors, because we love the elderly. And kind of a weird turn of events, because now I am those people. And I hope you guys are as kind to me. Look at that lady saying, hey, power to the people, I'm here. You know, I'm ready to do my thing. So it was a wonderful feeling. And very, very touching. I can't believe some of the things that we made happen myself, and I was a part of it. Women, the role of women in our movement, in our Black Panther Party, just incredible. Women held up 50% of that movement. There was a time when there were only women, running that Black Panther Party, primarily on my watch. All the guys were like almost in prison somewhere, all the leadership. So these women were like a critical link in the success in the day-to-day operation of our Black Panther movement. And when you study the history, you know, you get this criticism about how we were chauvinist and sexist, and some of that's true. We were born in America. Young boys were raised that they were tough and women were tender, and you know, they were the breadwinners and women were inferior, so we didn't stand outside that male belief system. But we did try to deal with those issues, unlike most organizations that came out of that period. And I challenge you to this, especially you women, do the research. SCLC, King's organization, SNCC, Stokely's organization, nobody did as much for women as we did in our Black Panther Party in terms of the democratization of roles and leadership. Lane Brown was the leader of the Black Panther Party. Kathleen Cleaver was in leadership in the Black Panther Party. My wife, Pat Hilliard, was in leadership. Audrey Jones founded the Black Panther Party in Boston, who's now a PhD at Temple University. Frances Carter Hilliard founded the chapter in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Erica Huggins started the chapter in Los Angeles, California. These women were at the helm of the leadership in our Black Panther Party. And I tell you something, when the police are kicking your doors down, and 47 of my members were killed, 47, and there's about that many in jail, and about 8 or 9 still in exile, you just know about Asada. But there's many more people in exile than Asada. There's more people in prison than Mumia. And that's been in prison before Mumia got there. But let me just tell you, that there was a period in our Black Panther Party when these women really, really stood up and ran everything, and they're not noted for it. And I want to celebrate that, and I want to bring that to your attention. And I want to underscore that so that you won't forget that. That's Frederica Newton, Huey Newton's widow. She's the vice president, or the president of the Huey Newton Foundation. That's when she was 18 years old and a student at Wesleyan University. That's Huey Newton, with a filmmaker. His name is Bert Snyder. Bert Snyder is a very famous filmmaker that got an Academy Award for a movie on Vietnam called Hearts and Minds. And also won an Academy Award for a movie called Easy Rider. But that was Bert who supported our Black Panther Party with his money. So Hollywood people would give us lots of money because that's what they had. And they said that we can support you, we'll give you money. And we said, thank you very much. And there's Huey with James Baldwin. You guys know who James Baldwin was? But that's Huey with James Baldwin. And look how adorably he looks at James Baldwin. He's just so proud of James Baldwin. We had a group. We always combined art and politics. That was our group called The Lumpin'. So when you came to a Black Panther Party event, you know, you got these guys, they perform. They didn't sing very well, but they're loud, you know. But that's who those guys were. The guy with the hat on, his son is the leader of my rap group now, called the Black Panther Fugitives. And his son and Tupac Shakur started making music together. Jamil Hassan is his son's name. Him and Tupac was raised by Afeni. And Jamil is now the leader of our group called the Black Panther Fugitives. Meaning we run away from bitches and hoes and misogynist lyrics. We don't do that. We about consciousness, and you know, we infuse in this, hopefully this rap generation, the kind of positive lyricism that you hear from a Talib Kweli, from a Mos Def, from Common, Erykah Badu, or Dead Prez. Those are the kind of folks who tied into our Black Panther consciousness, and the kind of people that we try to infuse with, you know, with some positive messages. This is in the park. That's his Emory Douglas art. Everywhere we went, we made money because we sold our own images. A lot of people say, how y'all get money? Well, we sold our art. We sold, long before Puffy and these guys started selling clothes, we sold Panther t-shirts and buttons, and we sold our own images. We were good marketers. We could market. You know, we made our own money. That's my son to the left there. He's now the president of my record, our record company. And those were our kids. Wherever we were our kids. We couldn't see them. So we said, oh, why don't we just start a school? And then the kids could live with us all the time, and we could see them all day, and then they could sleep at night, and we won't be separated from our kids. So we just bought these, we didn't buy the houses, the Hollywood movie stars would buy these houses, and we do nursery schools and charter schools, cause so we could be close to our families, our children. That's Huey Newton in a way that you've never saw him before, very playful with the kids that wanted the school blowing bubbles. That's what you usually see about the Panthers, so we sort of juxtapose that very menacing kind of look that you always see on the front of magazines with Huey in that very kind of playful mood. That's my brother in the front. The guy in the middle is in exile. He's been gone now since 69. The guy in the rear, I think he's somewhere in Tennessee or something. He's still around. And of course, Bobby Seale in the back on the poster said kidnapped. It's Huey Newton at his graduation ceremony at UC Santa Cruz in a way that you don't usually see Huey with his down on getting us PhD, and I think that's it. So thank you very much. We got time for questions and answers here. So you guys have some questions, hopefully. Anybody? But come on, because I'm losing my voice.
What's your guys' association with like the Weatherman Group and like SES and like Chinese Party? Can you just like talk about that a little bit more?
Well, we worked with all of those groups. We worked with the Communist Party, we worked with SDS. Remember I mentioned the Brown Berets? There was another group called the Patriot Party from Chicago. They were these Appalachian whites. Kind of weird phenomena. These guys would have on a Confederate flag button on this side and a Black Panther button on this side. And they were, hey, we down with you guys, you know. So it kept with Bob, whoever. We care. As long as you hate oppression, you're all right with us. What do we care? But we worked with all of the left groups, as a matter of fact. And there was these divisions at one point because we considered even the Weathermen faction, they were sort of on a more, as we said, infantile left trip that we just didn't buy into. We were about some of that stuff that they were certainly not about when it came to electoral politics. And so there was this sort of ideological difference that evolved in the latter stages of our movement. But we worked with almost every group that was around during those days. I see you out there. Not as much. There's somewhat this, this perpetual fear that's a direct result of, you know, Bush and his administration on the suppression of your very rights to speak out against, the government and things you don't like. People are afraid that they're, punished. So there's not a lot. Not like you mentioned, during that period of the 60s. So I don't see that quite enough. I should say I'm very impressed with the group that showed up here at this event, because I've been at events where I get about 20 people, literally. They just don't turn up. And that's why I made the remark about 50 Cent and all those people, because they'll show up for these rap events and stuff like that, but politics are just not something that people turn out for, you know. It seems that the right wing, the Republican end of that deal do all right, because they seem that they never stopped organizing, and it's something that maybe we ought to start looking at. How they doing? What have they been doing all these years while we've been laying around here just, criticizing and has given up the fight? But there's certainly a need for that to happen again, because we're in bad shape, and a lot of the things that's happening now are so familiar to what was going on in the 60s and 70s, so there's certainly a need for a rebirth in movements. Well, there's a group called the New Black Panthers, and I criticize their politics because they seem to promote separatism and racism, and they don't do much else except has a lot of imagery, has a lot of show. That's why I show these slides. I mean, you see, we were always in the community working. We were doing something, and it's just no doubt that the reason I exist today, because they killed, they killed a whole lot of Panthers, ran us into exile, but I'm here because people say, we know what y'all did, and we remember you, and we're going to protect you. But if we didn't do these community service programs, I wouldn't be here today. So I criticize their lack of any real action, any real community work. I don't care nothing about all that rhetoric and all that talk about white this or Jewish this, because that's not us anyway. That's the one thing that we were not. So there obviously is a thirst, there's a desire, because there's all these young people that's still trying to get to this stuff, and they come for all the right reasons. But the leadership is wrong. And what the leadership is leading them toward is absolutely, totally, diametrically opposed to who we are. So I fight that and I criticize that. That is not to say there is not need for new movements, because of course they are. But you just can't come and decide you're going to degrade, criminalize, just totally dog this Black Panther Party that lost Lil Bobby Hutton on my watch, Bunchy Carter, John Huggins, Fred Hampton, my comrades, dead. Because they gave their lives for meaningful struggle, not for somebody to just think they can come and just usurp it and not do anything to uphold its integrity. But yes, there's a need for it, and I don't see that happening much anywhere when I go these days. You know, I just don't see it. We were not a philanthropist movement. We didn't get grants, not a one. So grants bring conditions. I mean, criteria. So come telling me about how revolutionary you are, and every time you write a check, you gotta abide by somebody else's mandate. They know you're not a revolutionary movement. And very little progressive are you in terms of those kind of movements. But I don't care anything about that, because I've done what I had to do, and I go a long way to stand in my shoes. So I don't care what they say. But they can't fool guys like me who've been there. So it's about the work. And if you're not about doing the work, and you don't get any glory out of it, hey, like you get paid, we didn't have no pension program. I don't get no pension. And did my time in the penitentiary and almost got killed how many times I can't remember. But I don't get nothing out of that. Don't have nothing to lay back on. All I got is this history and these ideas to share with people. And that's people who sometimes have the nerve to try to criticize me about that. You know? So, you know, it's in answer to your question, I just don't see a lot of that happening with these new organizations. And what was the second part of your question?
What was the time frame the Black Panther Party was
active? We started in 66. We were around until 1980. 1980 was the last death throes of our Black Panther Party. Then we just had a newspaper that was coming out periodically, and then after Huey's death in 89, you could consider just that was essentially it. But from 66 to 1980, we were still pretty much, active in doing things. The programs were sort of vitiated. The programs didn't exist sometime around late 75. And that's because the government would adopt the programs. I mean, like the Breakfast with Children program, after about 1968, 69, we started them. 1975, almost every school in America got a Breakfast for Children program. But that's what we wanted to happen. We wanted the government to shift some of its budgetary priorities to start doing those kind of things. But, it was a long period of time. I guess, you know, that it's still very young, very, you know, youth movement, but We didn't expect to stay around that long. I didn't. I didn't think I'd live to be 30 years old, because they were killing us. Well, you know, there's only one thing to do on the latter question, and that is to put some shoes on and go outside. You know, you can't talk your way out of this shit. You gotta work. I mean, that's how you separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, it's what made us stand out for most people. They say they out there in that hawk around Lake Michigan. They out there in that 17-degree weather. They selling them newspapers, they up feeding those kids. And that's what the community would say. I don't care what you say about the Black Panthers, they feed my kids, they give us these programs. They saw that and they loved that. And in terms of Fred Hampton, they didn't mobilize the chapter, it was actually somewhat the demise of that chapter. And that's why they killed Fred Hampton. He was a very strong voice there. But it was two people, it was he and Bobby Rush. But Fred was the motivating factor in that chapter. But Fred wasn't the only person that got killed that night, if you remember. It was also Mark Clark. Doc Satchel got shot. About 8 people got killed, the shot in that house. 2 got killed. But that was an attempt, that was part of the government's repression to say that, and they said it in their own words, that we'll show you that the only good Panther's a dead one. And this is the kind of example we're gonna set for young people who wanna be a Fred Hampton or Huey Newton. You follow these guys' example, this is what will happen to you. You see? So, you know, wasn't a lot done after that. That party was sort of in its demise after the murder of Fred Hampton. People were afraid, you know, and that's what that's about. They mean to scare you. They kill you, and they want to instill fear in people. When you read our history, you will note that we call ourselves the highest personification of Malcolm X's ideas. So, of course, we were inspired by the Nation of Islam. In terms of their discipline, they did some very good things. Our program is sort of a model of their what you want, what you believe. But then, of course, the difference is that they were a religious movement and we were a political movement. That's sort of where it ends. But Malcolm, and his self-defense agenda out of the African-American Organization for Unity is it's where we stood. That's who we said, yeah, we like Malcolm. We want to take Malcolm's ideas to higher manifestation. And when Eldridge Cleaver came to our Black Panther Party in 67, he was just getting out of prison. He was carrying on Malcolm's Organization of African-American Unity. He was the spokesperson for Malcolm's group. So we were very, very much inspired by, you know, Malcolm X in that period of the Nation of Islam. We were Malcolm's heirs.
I had read that the Revolutionary Action Movement that was going on around the same time as the Black Panther, that Huey Newton had come out of that and formed the Black Panther Party, or, you know, that process afterwards. And I wonder if you could comment on what the Revolutionary Action Movement was.
Well, it was RAM, was a movement where Max Stafford and, you know, much never happened there, really. Ron Dellums was also a part of that movement. Huey wasn't a part of RAM. Huey was a member of an organization called Afro-American Association under Donald Wharton, is where he started, but didn't really have much to do with Revolutionary Action Movement, and was more inspired by Robert Williams and in that, you know, faction where Robert Williams with those NAACP folks in Monroe, North Carolina, you know, were armed to defend themselves against racist Klan terror. And for people who are interested, that's in a book called Negro with Guns, if you want to research that history. But not Revolutionary Action Movement. That movement wasn't around very long anyway. I think they did one action that I can remember where they went to the Statue of Liberty, I think, and some incident happened there with Max Stafford, I think, was in the old days. But no, Huey came out of the Afro-American Association. There was another group called the Black Panther Political Party in Los Angeles who used to run around with microphones and radios, walkie-talkies, and police radios, but didn't do very much. And Huey's criticism of both that group and even some of the groups in the South is that these guys have the guns, but when the sheriff comes, they put the guns up and depend on the very people that were the Klan, you know, at night, to protect them. And he said, that doesn't make sense to me. Why would they turn their guns over to these racist guys who were just in uniform and after 5 o'clock they're the Klan again? I don't have no respect for that. So we gonna create the Black Panther Party and ain't nobody gonna take these guns. Because we gonna stand between these racist police in the community. So that's sort of how we drew the differences between those guys, the Deacons for Defense. Most of those guys were courageous in what they did, but it just, when it came time to for the sheriff to come and ride around, they put those guns down. That's why when the police came around Huey and said, give me your gun, Huey said, you don't get this gun, it's my gun. And they tried to enforce him. He said, if I was you, I wouldn't come any closer because I have a right to carry this gun and you can't have it. And the police said, the gun's loaded. He said, clack, clack, it wasn't, but it is now. What you gonna do about it? and was willing to die and did that so many times. But there was very few men that I've ever seen with that kind of courage. But that was the basic difference between the Black Panther Party and these other folks. You know, they stood on ready to die for what we believed in. There wasn't no bullshit there. And there was a chilling effect on the police. They wasn't going around shooting up nobody and wasn't messing with the folks in the community for a very, very long time. Started come kicking doors in and shooting people in the bed. But it wasn't like they were just running up on the Black Panther Party. As a matter of fact, when you read To Die for the People under Executive Mandate Number 2, and with Kathleen with that gun, the police came to Eldridge's house. And Huey said that can never happen again. The police can never come to your house because you're the Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. Kathleen is the Communications Secretary. From this day forward, we draw the threshold at our door. If the police don't come with a warrant, you can't let them in, because if you do, you're expelled from the party for life because you're setting a bad example for people in our Black Panther Party and you guys' leadership. That's why Kathleen has that gun. That gun was on the front page of the paper under a mandate called the Executive Mandate Number 2, and it talks about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, how the police, these gangsters came in police uniforms, and you would say, for all I know, they thugs. If they don't come with a warrant and show badges, they're going to get blown out of this goddamn door here. They don't come to no Panther house unless they got a search warrant. And everybody in the Black Panther Party, police hit that door, they better have a search warrant, and you better do something to defend that house. Don't you can't ever be in this Black Panther Party again. So stuff was getting really hard. You can't be jiving now. Either you're going to stand up and be in the party and go join some little punk organization. But you can't be in this one. So that's how we did it. Well, that's why I come here. That's why we have the slides. Our history is at Stanford University. I have a new book coming out on Huey. Hopefully they hold it until next year, which would be the 40th anniversary of the founding of our party. But giving this information to your generation is what's needed. I believe, I know that we're in a struggle and a war of ideas. And you're right, there's so much bad information about our movement. But if you get the right information, you make right choices, then things will begin to change. So the Huey Newton Foundation is about that. We are a knowledge-producing organization. We don't just sell papers and books, we sell knowledge, we sell information. And we want that information to be available to your generation. Thus, we deposited our archives at Stanford University. It's the most voluminous archive in existence on the history of our Black Panther Party. This is the Huey Newton Collection. So that's there, and it's there for you to access. But I don't see the kind of unity that we talked about and that we represented historically. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The media and its assault on what we represent. If you're not doing some slapstick, if it's not 105 and doing some kind of buck dance with a lot of bling bling and some stupid mess about girls with short, no clothes on, you ain't getting no coverage. So a lot of this stuff is what the media has done to your generation with all these wrong ideas and wrong images. So you need what we're trying to impart here. And again, it's why I still persist in doing this, but I don't know why, you know, it's taken such a long time for young people of your particular ilk to get things together. But I see it happening. I'm impressed with what Jay-Z and Some of these other guys are doing, Talib Kweli, as I mentioned, Black Alicious, these guys with these conscious messages. Chuck D, I listen to on Radio Free America. I like that. These guys got old and not young guys no more. They got grandkids and stuff. They got to try to start shaping and help forming new images and new role models. But I don't know, man. It's a tough deal for you to counter all of this negative with Fox and UPN and all these channels with all this negative stuff that comes on. But that's sort of where you guys got to go with it. You know, you got to do more independent filmmaking where you can really tell your story and don't worry about whether anybody, you know, supports it. You just got to do the work. And it starts with the right kind of ideas and giving people, you know, new concepts to work with. And that's not an easy task. But then on the other hand, I applaud your generation because you guys are very, very courageous. You have to be. You're doing a lot of positive things, you know, and I see and recognize that because I'm all, you know, over the country. I especially like what, you know, guys on the East Coast are doing. You guys sort of set the standard for consciousness in this rap industry, so I really respect that. Most all these conscious rappers come out, you know, it's the East Coast. So I like that, and I respect that, but it's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there's no easy answers to it, man, you know, but keep it up. Keep coming.
I was wondering what H-Rap Brown had, what kind of impact he had on the Black Panthers.
H-Rap Brown was in our Black Panther Party. We drafted him as our Minister of Justice. H-Rap Brown and Stokely Carmichael were our heroes. They were like the guys we used to see on television doing the student marches and stuff. So we were in California watching these guys in Atlanta and at Howard University. And we turned our Black Panther Party over to those guys. Stokely was the prime minister, doesn't deserve to be in prison, he's innocent. And again, that's your work. You gotta know what to do, you gotta fight, you gotta study, you can't let that brother down. Can't leave him up there and let people forget him. Cause he paid the price. It was disheartening that Rap Brown, who fought to get these people who were the DAs, who are these black judges in Atlanta, in those positions, and for those people, a jury probably of 12 of them who are all black folks, to put that man in the penitentiary with such flimsy evidence. The very same people that he fought for and that many of his comrades died for. And here he is, being faced by all these Uncle Tom bootlicking ass Negroes, and they put that man in the penitentiary. So it's not like you can say white folks did that to him. No, them plantation mentality and black folks in Atlanta did that to somebody who put his line on the line and would have died for him. And look where he is. That's a sad commentary on your time. I ain't responsible for that shit. I'm not a part of that. I'm with rap. So I don't know, you guys just got to get it together and say no more of this kind of stuff. We ain't going for it. If anything you should have rebelled for, y'all should have rebelled against that. That was outrage. And for people to talk about Atlanta as a black city.
When you say the people who ask, why you guys
are
doing what you're doing, why you guys didn't follow Martin Luther King's philosophy, like he got stuff done without carrying a gun. What do you say to that?
That we got stuff done with guns?
No, that Martin Luther King got stuff done without carrying a gun.
Martin Luther King made a lot of beautiful speeches. Martin Luther King didn't do very much. The only people benefited from Martin Luther King's approach for civil rights is white women in the black middle class. So I don't agree with you that Martin Luther King got a lot done. I know I got a lot of my comrades in the penitentiary and in exile, and people are still benefiting from the work that we did, from feeding the children to free healthcare ideas to, when you talk about police profiling, well, we laid our lives on the line to make sure that there were these black police officers, black women, gays, Latinos, Asians on police department. That was not King's work. King was a wonderful orator, and King made speeches. But King was not the centrality of the black movement in America. That's a misconception. And we've allowed that to happen because that's what white America gives us. Every month in February, we inundated with SCLC and Martin Luther King. Well, I know what happened when King was around. That was a period where Malcolm X was much more popular than Martin Luther King. I knew I was there. And everybody 18 to 25 was on Malcolm's note, or on Stokely's note. They was with King. My mother supported Martin Luther King, like most Christian people did. But King was not the centrality and the sum total of black struggle in America. That's just not true. And in terms of his gains, I don't know how to measure that. Because when I look around, we still the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to jobs. 59% in all these penitentiaries and raising every day with our women and that kind of stuff. Cannon fodder over there in Iraq messing with those people in the Middle East, and we ought to be in our communities trying to defend what goes on in our own communities with all this racism and police brutality and stuff. So I don't agree with you that King did all of this stuff. It's America that has marketed King to us and given us King as being this great liberator. He did some stuff, he got his dues, but King was not the sum total of our struggle. And I just mentioned it to you. SNCC was around, Stokely, RAP, CORE, Congress of Racial Equality. The brother just mentioned RAM, the Black Panther Party. All these organizations. King was not the only organization around. It was one organization called Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
But I think that you go back to 1963, the March on Washington, I think that Martin Luther King raised the consciences of people in America, which helped, I think, spearheaded the Black Panther Party, made them aware of their surroundings as well. So I think both of them, one helped the other. I, like you said, you can't gauge, but the Black Panther Party helped raise consciousness of people too about police brutality in America. But I would say that Martin Luther King raised the consciousness of people of all over as far as their status in America, which I think helped the Black Panther Party come along.
I wouldn't argue with that. King was certainly a galvanizing force. But I said that King was not the sum total of black struggle in this country. But that is not to deny King and his contributions at his level. But what has been given to us is that it's Martin Luther King and there's nothing else. I'm saying that if you study the history of black struggle in this country, and you make a good point, the fact of the matter is, if you really want to know how the Black Panther Party evolved, you have to go back to 1619. Because who are we? Well, Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner. We're the descendants of those slaves who would rather die than to take another day on Master's plantation. We them rebellious niggas that say, I ain't going for it. We running from Master's plantation. Then you had them other Negroes who do what they do. So if you want to know who we are, then count us among the 50 million lost during the transatlantic slave trade. All of the slaves who would rather die than stand for another day of oppression. Then count us with the Marcus Garveys and the W.B. Du Boises. Then count us with King, because you're right, King was older than us and did his work. Count us with Malcolm. Then in 1966, here come all the generations after those folk that's doing it their way. So there's a certain amount of relevance in what you say. I just resent the fact that it's all about King. Much more than that.
You talk about some of the prisoners that are still locked up.
There's so many of them. Mumil, you know about, but Chip Fitzgerald was in the pen 15 years before Mumil got there. He's actually the longest reigning Black Panther Party member still in the penitentiary. And, of course, you got Mumil, then you got these other people who were in some way incidental and involved with the Panthers and then went over to this other organization called the Black Liberation Army. About 40 of those people. Then there's the Angola 3, those brothers that's in prison in Louisiana. I mean, they're all over the place. You know, there's a whole list of political prisoners. Eddie Conway in Baltimore, Maryland, right? So there's people all over the place. There's about six or seven people still in Cuba, in exile there. So there, you know, there's a lot of people who paid the price. There's still left out there. But How do you reconcile that? Well, we had those guns. We declared that we would stand and live on for what we died for. So they killed us. They sent us to prison. We want to be like Malcolm X and Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. Well, we kind of got that. That's what you got to be expecting if you're going up against this system. So I don't kowtow, I don't beg, I don't apologize. It's what we were, it's what we stood for. I just like to tell the story in its context. But a lot of our people are in prison because they were casualties of our struggle. You know, we knew that we would either be killed or we'd go to penitentiary. Lucky if you went to the pen. Because there's so many other people that didn't make it, you know. And I'm glad to still be here to tell the story and to celebrate those people who gave their lives. But, you know, we were involved in a life and death struggle to make the world a better place for people that I've never met and probably will never see. But, you know, I gave my pound of flesh and my cup of blood. I suffered for mine, you know, and ain't asking nobody to give nothing, don't care if they recognize it. I got an object that will always be in the universe, a book, three books as a matter of fact. And, you know, I'm well entrenched in history whether I ever do another thing in my life. People will always know I exist. And I did something that was not selfish. I did it for other people. And I'm proud of that. And that's what I stand on. I don't bow and kowtow to nobody. Never had, don't have no job. But I do what I do. What I do, I sell my history. It's what I lived and died on. It's what I lived and stood for. And I'm ready to do it, and I'm almost on the way out of here. And I can say, and, you know, hopefully it's my epitaph, that this guy was somebody that you could trust what he said. And he'd always do what he said he would do.
That's it for you guys?
I was just wondering if you could talk about the downfall of the Panthers and how COINTELPRO manipulated Eldridge Cleaver and Newman and all the other leaders.
Yeah, he just kind of saying that we should talk a little bit about how COINTELPRO caused the divisions between Eldridge and Huey. I write about that in the new book. The new book is called Huey Newton, The Spirit of the Panther. And a lot of, one of the big chapters is about that division. And yeah, the FBI promoted that. They, you know, writing all these letters from, allegedly from Eldridge to Huey with Eldridge's signature on them that they concocted, saying, you know, how Eldridge was going to have Geronimo kill Huey, kill me, and all that kind of FBI stuff. But a lot of that stuff was also Eldridge's fault because of, you know, Eldridge wouldn't come deal to grips to deal with that stuff. He just had his own idea about how you make revolution or social change. And Huey had a different viewpoint of that. You know, Eldridge was stuck to this whole thing about that early period where you saw Huey and Bobby with the guns, that revolutionary action phase. He never quite got out of that. And Huey Newton was saying, you got to get away from that. That's over. We are now this other model where we got to do more service to the people and more political stuff. And Eldridge said that we become reformists, that we become a Breakfast for Children program. You know, and we'd abandon our revolutionary approach. And so when you study the history based on those ideological differences, then you will see that Huey Newton was really, you know, a very rational and more of a peaceful guy. Although he was the one that started it with these guns, but he saw very quickly that we're getting stuck in this gun thing here, and this is just not good because we suffering the brunt of it. And it's costing us dearly. So we got to get away from that and try to make this turn. And a lot of people were not willing to do that. There's a lot of people who associated revolution with that whole gun thing. And the gun is not the revolution. It was a tool for our own self-defense purpose. And, you know, beyond that, we saw revolution as being this long process that I probably won't see, and that Huey Newton certainly did not see. And a lot of people that gave their lives would never see the day of this so-called revolutionary transformation society. Because revolution don't happen like that. It's a process, you know. It took Malcolm, it took King, it took Du Bois, it took Garvey. All these people added to that process. And so we add to the process with our Black Panther Party, and we're still looking at trying to bring about those changes. In a lot of ways, the same things that we struggle for then are right here, right now. So, you know, it's, you know, the FBI in its work to try to frustrate our movement and reduce us to this single entity of just these violent prone criminal guys, you know. But it's not fair to just say that the FBI single-handedly, you know, just came in and destroyed and controlled our party. A lot of that stuff was because of egos. Guys 18, 19 year old don't have that much going on in terms of political knowledge. You know, we're very young. We made a lot of mistakes. But that's what you guys are here to do, to study it, to review it, and to hopefully come up with new analogies and new models based on the mistakes and the gains that we made. You have to look at it in that context, but you know, we did our best. All right, you guys, I can go now. Thank you.